outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bravada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
When I used to travel, back in the day, some distant past, I haven't gotten on an airplane to go somewhere and hang out with people, and I don't miss not going to the airport. I do miss hanging out with people. Sarah and I are just on the way back from a trip to Denver to visit our son. We're taking an RV back there so Sarah can stay out of all the places where the COVID might be festering, and we'll get to have some time with my son, and then probably swinging through Flagstaff to visit some old friends, and then headed home. So that's the extent of our traveling this year, pretty much has been RVing it to Denver and back. But when I used to travel, I'd meet a lot of people, maybe for the first time. A friend came with them, someone to dinner, or they were in a meeting I was at, and they hear some of that talk, and just they look at my book table, and they would look at me saying, if I was going to buy one book here, what would you recommend? And my answer is always the same. I think the most important book I've ever written or will ever write is He Loves Me, Learning to Live in the Father's Affection. Now, I know it's not a sexy title. I know He Loves Me. People say, oh, yeah, Jesus loves me. This I know, for the Bible tells me so. And people have that. We are very familiar with the language that God loves me. But we're certainly not familiar, many, with the lifestyle of living loved instead of living in fear and performance, and trying to endear ourselves to God so we can get blessings from Him. What's in that little book, He Loves Me, changed the entire trajectory of my life over a 5 or 6 year period, and it still continues. That started about 26 years ago. It still continues. The book's 20 years old. I'd waited to write on those things until I could live in the reality and find it as fulfilling as my hopes were. And not just living in His love, like I can get away with murder and do whatever I want because God just loves me. It has been the most transformative journey. I still see things. Saw something last week in a situation where I know the old Wayne would have responded differently. And I'm not talking about externally, because I was good at pretending back in the day. But internally, I was responding differently with greater freedom than I'd ever known before. I love that that's still happening. I'm 67. Jesus is still taking shape in me. And that thrills me to no end. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. This is The God Journey. Last week, we began a podcast out of a book group I did for a friend of mine. Jeff Andreessen had a number of men studying my book, He Loves Me, Learning to Live in the Father's Affection. And they and their wives wanted to get with me on a Zoom session one night. They're from all over the country and Canada, and great time fellowshipping with them. We played the first half last week. I told you we'd play the second half this week just because I want people to be re-exposed to that content. And if you're like so many of my friends that just let that book sit on your shelf forever thinking you already know what's in there, man, I love getting the email, the phone call, somebody saying, you know what? I finally read your book, He Loves Me. It's been sitting on my shelf forever. And I thought, yeah, I know all that stuff. Man, I finally read it. I had no idea the content in there and how it has shaped some things in my heart, even reading through it. I've got other people who read it every year or every year or two because it refreshes them in that understanding of the Father's affection. And if you're all familiar with it, already living it, skip the podcast. But if you enjoy seasoning your heart again in the reality that you are deeply loved by the Father of the ages, and that's not the journey we're on to try and get there. That's the trailhead. That's where the journey begins. Begin to live loved, and you'll find a journey in God and His transformation of you that you won't believe. If you're only going to read one book, read that one. If you're only going to listen to one podcast, listen to this one. Here I am with Jeff Andreessen and his book group on He Loves Me.
I am very comfortable now in the process that Jesus is the one transforming me, and I'm in His school, and so I'm going to let Him do it in His way, and I'm not going to freak out over the places where I don't rely on His love yet. I'm going to ask Him to help teach me. Definitely. God, what is it about Your love I don't know that if I knew it, I wouldn't be fearful here. I wouldn't be anxious here. I pray that all the time. I interrupted you, though.
Yeah, I've got a couple other questions, but I'm going to, as you're talking about this, and I'm thinking about the centrality of the cross, and Jesus talking to the rich young ruler, and this is prior to the cross, and, you know, he says, hey, if you want eternal life, do these things, and of course, the rich young ruler says, well, I've done those, and then Jesus kind of raises the bar And says, well, sell everything that you have and give it to the poor and follow me, knowing full well that he couldn't do that. And yet, in the sense that's why I need to go to the cross. And I like that you're bringing that to the table. I think about that verse where I think Jesus says, hey, listen, if you want to be my disciple, you need to hate your brother, mother, father more than you love me. And come on, who really does that? You know, which one of us can say that we hate our father compared to our love for Christ? And I think he's showing us that we can't, that's why I have to go to the cross. You can't be my disciple until I do this very thing.
Yeah. If he doesn't do it in us, it doesn't get done. And I think if we saw everything, somebody said this to me years ago, and I loved it. If we saw everything that Jesus told us to do as a promise rather than a command, it'd be so, like, love your enemies. Who's going to do that, right? Yeah. Well, what Jesus is saying is, I have enough love to give you that one day you will come to a place where you'll love your enemy, not pretend to love. We can all pretend to love an enemy, but actually loving an enemy, that takes a work of transformation. That takes, you know, going to the cross takes a work of transformation. And he's the one that does it in us. We're just making ourselves available to him. So I think he does that when he's feeding the 5,000, he kind of sets the boys up saying, oh, we got a bowl of boys lunch. Good. Go feed these people. And they're like, what are you talking about, man? We got one stupid lunch. We can't do that. And Jesus is setting him up because he wants to show them he can. I can do what you can't do. What's impossible for man is possible with God. And that's part of the joy of this whole journey is when I see something God's inviting me to do that's beyond me, it doesn't discourage me. And like I go home and pout and I just go, okay, this is something you want to do in me. So have at me, whatever you need to do to get me in a place where I can trust you to go through that with you, I will. So how do we do that? We can't do without him. Otherwise, the scripture about, you know, as we take up our cross daily and follow him, that's been the most feared passage in discipleship classes ever. Yeah. Because we don't know what that means. We kind of think that's, I'm going to take up my cross and I'm going to follow him. I've got to do the worst thing I can think of to prove I'm serious with God. And that's not what he's saying. What he's saying is, hey, when push comes to shove, when God's asking you something and you'd rather not, lean into what God's asking. Lean that way, because that's where life is. If you don't take up your willingness to let Wayne's agenda, Wayne's desires, Wayne's wisdom die, then I'm going to miss out on so much that God has for me. It's not saying, hey, go find the worst thing you can do and do it for God, and that'll prove how serious you are. That's not what that's saying. There'll be moments in your life, and most of walking with God is great joy, that my joy might be in you and that your joy might be full. That's most of what walking with God is like. But there's those moments when God's saying, will you go down this road with me? And you're saying, no, I don't want to go down that road with you. Come on, come down this road with me. We'll learn something fabulous. And my best lessons have been down that road. I've got more to teach you if you walk away. Wayne doesn't walk away. Wayne doesn't let his reputation be besmirched by a pack of liars. I just don't do it.
Yeah.
But I did it. And that's those moments are transformative because he's invited us into something, not because we've decided to do something to prove our love. That's worthless.
Wayne, in relation to that, in walking with Jesus, a line kind of jumped out at me in the chapter, What Jesus' Disciples Didn't Know. It said, with only a few notable exceptions, people wanting nothing to do with the immediacy of God's presence. And I've experienced that as such a deep, pressing, fulsome immediacy. And it's such a beautiful word, and it's really the perfect word for it, but I really don't hear people speak about it very often. Just that immediacy, you know, the undeniability of that presence at times.
Yeah, we like keeping God a little more distant, don't we?
Yeah.
We really do. We're afraid of what he might ask of us, or we feel unworthy of it or whatever. We like the idea of God in the Holy of Holies, in the temple over there somewhere, instead of the omnipresent God who's with us everywhere we are. I mean, those Israelites, bless their hearts, they really thought he lived in that Holy of Holies when he was in their tents with them at night. But if they'd known he was in there, they'd been scared to death. So God's, okay, I'll pretend I'm over there, but I'm really right here, just so you don't freak out on me. It's the immediacy that's the transformative reality. We've, again, set transformation as like kind of like curriculum. Follow this curriculum. Do this, read your Bible, pray, go to church, give money, blah, blah, blah. That's what transformation is. And really the transformation is, no, I'm just getting to know him. Mm-hmm. And in the immediacy of the moment, there's things he'll show me, things he'll reveal to me, and he'll invite me into something. I think John refers to the language of Eugene Peterson, The Message. He talks about the world hates him because he exposes the evil behind men's pretensions. I love that language because that's what God's been doing with me the last 25 years. He's exposing the evil behind my pretensions, the thing, the illusions, the things I think are true that aren't really true. And when he exposes that and the evil don't take that word, you know, it doesn't make you a Hitler or anything. It just means that works ugly stuff in you because you're following a pretension. And Jesus pokes holes in that. And when he pokes holes in that, I don't like it for the most part. I get my duct tape out and I try to patch up that hole because we have our illusions because they give us comfort. And the real challenge, I think, of walking with Jesus is when he pokes a hole in our illusion, are we willing to go through that hole and find out what it is that we need to know? Or are we going to shrink back and hold on to our pretension? And I think that's what he's saying about why the world reacted so negatively to Jesus is because they didn't want to take on their pretensions. It just didn't. They like pretense. They like illusion. And oftentimes religion is a whole set of illusions that we convince ourselves things are true, even though they're not. And the journey with Jesus, his immediacy brings truth. It brings reality. And until you really want truth, I don't think you want his immediacy. You want him over there somewhere. You, like Jesus said to the Pharisees, you love the prophets now. Your forefathers killed them. I mean, you love Isaiah now that he's not talking to you. He was talking to them. And that's the immediacy of God involved with us. You're going to kill the prophets God's sending to you, which was himself and Stephen and some others. So it's the immediacy of God that challenges our agendas and our false comforts. And that's what we react to. And you don't want somebody doing that who you don't really trust has your best interest at heart.
Very hard to say no to that immediacy. I've learned that. You almost can't say no to whatever he's bringing in that immediacy. It's amazing.
For sure. For sure.
Gary, I'm not putting you on the spot, am I?
Yeah, you are.
No. I just enjoy listening. Wayne, I love the book.
Oh, that's sweet. Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely incredible. I wish that I read it 10 years ago. I've had conversations over the last 2 weeks with my men's group, with just strangers that I've met for the first time. It actually gave me a new language to use. I had one conversation with a man, and we got steered around to talking about salvation, and I used your terminology, you know, almost like, you know, chasing the prize. I was like, that's not what it's all about, you know. It's the relationship of the Father, and that man was literally about to cry. He's like, I so needed that.
So good.
I was talking about your book with my men's group this last Sunday. And there's like, you know, just me talking about the book, you know, about the prodigal son. I love the incredible Father that you use. That to me, that just registers more with me than the prodigal son. But they could see my passion just talking about your book. So I'm kind of like Chris. I'll be actually leading a study on your book.
That's great.
Coming up here very soon.
Wayne, for Gary, he finally got the "I love you" from his dad very, very late in your life, right, Gary?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I finally realized that, I never remember hearing my dad say he loved me. And, you know, through Zoe and a letter that I wrote to my dad, which I never actually gave him, that was the big hurt that I was carrying around, that he never said he loved me. Mm. And after some time of looking at the letter and everything, God's like, you don't tell him that you love him. So I started. And it took quite a bit of time, but he finally told me one day, you know, after a lot of grunts and kind of late I love yous after, you know, the conversation was over. He actually beat me to it one day.
Wow.
And that was just like the best day ever. And then shortly after that, the cancer took him, but he accepted Jesus Christ just before he died.
Awesome.
So.
Awesome.
You know, it was, but yeah, I've got good memories of my dad. A story that I've got that my dad actually took up for me when I was younger, and it never just registered to me how much he actually loved me at that moment to be doing what he was doing. So,
yeah, he shot a few guys for Gary that were getting in Gary's way.
Shot a few guys. Okay.
He peppered them.
Okay.
With birdshot. Yeah. No, I mean, I was a young fella. I got beat up by an older boy for fishing in a pond that I'd been fishing my whole life. And the boy just beat the snot out of me. My dad's like, well, tomorrow you're going to go fishing again. And the boy done told me, don't come back or I'll beat you up twice as bad. So that morning, daddy gets me up, takes me, you know, says, you're going fishing. I get up there and I can see him coming, and the boy's got his daddy with him. And the daddy says, is that the boy that you beat up yesterday? Didn't you tell him not to come back? And the boy's like, yeah. And he's like, well, go get him. About that time, my dad opens up. He was standing. It wasn't close range or anything. It was close enough to really, really dust him. And he lit him up.
Yeah. That's spectacular.
Needless to say, they never bothered me again.
So I assume it wasn't their pond. It was just a pond, and they were trying to claim it for them.
I had permission to be there. They had actually just moved into the house next door. Yeah, wow. And they didn't stay there long. They left.
That is a unique way for the father to show his love.
Yeah.
not recommending it to a lot of people, but yeah.
Well, you're talking 1970s,
yeah,
rural Kentucky.
Yeah. That was a hard generation too for guys to use love language.
Yeah,
yeah.
They would show it in their actions, and they thought, you know, I'm bringing home the food, I'm doing this. Doesn't that prove it? That's kind of that whole language. But yeah, we've become better talkers. We've become better as men, being able to say the words "I love you" and express more tenderness. Back in that day, I don't recall my dad using the language a lot. I don't know that he did. I don't remember how much, but it was obvious the way dad treated us kids, the way he played with us, the way he was involved with us. I never had a doubt that I was loved by my dad, but I don't know how much the language is. We say it now to each other. He says it to me all the time. But. Mm-hmm.
So, Wayne, I love how you turn everything on its head with this saying that we're really blessed when I'm all out of options. I've lost everything, and I'm at the end of my rope, and I have nothing to hold on to. As opposed to the athlete who's praising God after the touchdown, you know, as if God is about success. You're talking about this guy being in a blessed place, actually. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I stole that from Jesus. That's the first beatitude, actually, when he's saying, you know, blessed are you when you just don't have anything left to rely on, because now you're going to learn to rely on me. And that's that conversation you started a while back about learning to rely on that love, rely on him. We've been bred in the world to be self-sufficient, to do our best, you know, all that stuff. And finding someone else to rely on, I think it's a great opportunity. When people are at the end of themselves, I'm getting a lot of email today from people using the word overwhelmed with the COVID crisis, the racial unrest, the political engagement in our culture, just really feel overwhelmed, maybe even unemployed in this virus. And overwhelmed is a great place to be if you've got a father whose lap you can fall on, because God always has options. God has a way to negotiate us through stuff. But when all of our ability to care for ourselves, all the ways we could see things working out, I can't tell you how many times, strictly in those early days where Sarah and I were out of options, and either God was going to save us or we weren't going to be saved in very specific circumstances. and watched him come through, watch him provide a way where we couldn't see a way. And so, yeah, it's it, when you're there and you watch God rebuild something in your life, it's an amazing moment. You really are a blessed person. Now, I don't feel blessed for sure. You just, all those beatitudes. That's why I just say you are blessed when that's happening. Because I get said, you know, blessed are you when men lie about you and exclude you on my on account of my name. And you go, okay, you're counted all joy. You're okay, there's no joy here. You know, counting it joy is, okay, there's something beyond it. And that's what God's trying to direct our heart toward. There's something beyond those moments. And so it's not a failure of God to be in a moment where you're overwhelmed. The passage you read from 2 Corinthians 1 from Paul saying we were so far beyond ourselves, we despaired even of life.
Yeah.
This happens so we'd be comforted by you and then learn to rely on you even better. And so, yeah, those are wonderful moments to have behind you. They're not right. Wonderful moments to be in the middle of. Right. That's for sure.
Right. Looking back, they're some of the greatest
great moments.
But as long as you're looking back at them,
yeah.
Not
yeah.
In the middle of them.
Yeah. Had a guy come back from Vietnam and he said, those are good days to have behind me. I really grew up. A lot of things happened in my heart, but that was a nightmare. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some things are.
I was, I think most of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, Wayne, from your book are addressed. I'm pretty sure this is from your book. You were talking about trust. And love, and you can't trust God. You can't love God beyond the level of trust you have for Him. And I've been in situations in my life with betrayal of employees and different situations with other men, where you lose trust with other people. But I've also lost trust with God. And yet I've never really seen it that I actually lost love with God until I read that. And or I have your book on Audible, so I don't have a clue what chapter it is, but that was just one chapter that really stopped me and made me sit there for quite a long time, is how do I grow in that trust again for God? I trusted my dad. I lost my dad 11 years ago. I have other dads in my life. I don't know that I've ever had a reason not to trust my dad, but it's always just been to a point. It's never been, oh, I know that you'll lay down your life for me or whatever. So I don't know if you have anything you want to speak into that will just help to where to go to build that trust, or to that trust goes deeper.
Yeah, I think I may have heard you wrong, but I think I try and say it the other way around. Trust is a byproduct of love. You need to trust someone to the degree that you know they love you. So if you're not trusting someone, that just means you don't know how much they love you, or they may not. That's why Jesus kind of said he entrusted himself to no man, because he knew it was in all men, which is, and I've had business partners betray me. I've had like this co-pastor friend. I've had major people in my life make promises and then prove absolutely that when push comes to shove, they will do whatever they think is in their self-interest instead of even what they promised they would do or said they would do. And so Jesus knows that. He's not telling us we need to trust people. What I see is this: trust is the fruit of love. So the more I know I'm loved, the more I'll trust. That's why when I'm in a situation where I don't trust God, and I'm honest enough to say, God, I don't trust you here. I wish I did. I'm mentally committed to you. I know you're big. I know all the intellectual arguments that I should. I just am not, because I'm incredibly anxious about it. So when I know that, then my prayer is, God, what is it about your love I don't know that if I knew it, I would be at rest in this circumstance? Now, that's not always a thing. Like I get a bullet point back saying, you know, this is what you don't know, because it's not intellectual. It's a relational growth that will take me to that place where his love is big enough to contain whatever I'm in that I'm not trusting him about. So my encouragement always with trust is, don't try to trust him more, because I don't think that works. I don't think we can trust more than we trust, but we can experience more of his love. And then when I know he loves me, got my back, got the best wisdom in the world, I will trust him with those things. And I think most of our life is that, you know, I'm living in this little bubble of God's care and everything feels good. And I feel, I trust him for everything. And then something happens where the circumstance gets worse and my trust in him doesn't go to this circumstance. It was fine in this circumstance. It's not fine when it blows up. And that's a lot of my life. And then I'm in there going, okay, God, I've got anxiety. I'm awake in the middle of the night. And so now I'm saying, okay, God, I need to know how much you're loved so that I can trust you in this. And then over time, over weeks, months, that trust, that perception of his love grows. And then I find myself still able to trust now where 3 months before I couldn't trust there. Now I can. And so I'm in that space and that feels really good. And then something else happens. And so I'm back at that same. And I think that's how God grows our trust. I think God over time, just, I love you. I want you to know it. Now you know it for this. Okay, this happens. Well, now I want you to know it for that. And then that happens. And so it's an ever expanding growth. Jesus is the author and finisher of our trust, according to Hebrews 12. So this was meant to be a growing reality that he does in us. And I think he does that by revealing his love to us and us learning to surrender to it.
So when you came up to the Haskins, I don't know how many years ago this was.
I don't either. I don't remember, but I remember being there.
So you told a story about a woman who said that she didn't know how much God loved her or whatever. I can't remember, but you said, and I'm probably not getting the words right, but you said, say this every day, and then in 8 months, let me know if you still think God didn't love you. And so what I took with that, so I don't know what your words were, but I took from that to pray. I just pray it all the time. Lord, show me how much you love me. Show me who you truly are. Show me who I truly am. And so that's just, so for Neil, who's disappeared, that has really changed. And also because it was for since you said to wait for 8 months, because I think you said one time you told somebody else and at 6 months they hadn't felt God's love yet, so you moved it to 8. But since I had 8 months out, I didn't kind of keep checking to see if, you know, if I felt loved by God. And we have this prisoner, well, he's an ex-prisoner now, that we were writing, he's a pen pal, and he just kept telling us all this junk about how his wife who had died was an angel, but he didn't know if he was going to go to heaven and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I finally said, okay, Tony, okay, enough of that. I don't want to hear it anymore. What I want you to do is I want you to pray these three things, you know, about show me how much you love me, Lord. Show me who you truly are. Show me who I truly am. And he's different now, right? He no longer says, well, I don't think I'm going to go to heaven, because it's all based on, he was the Hell's Angel kind of guy. And so he feels like he's got this stack of stuff, where his wife had almost no stack. And so he feels like, well, then he doesn't deserve it. But when you start asking God to show you how much he loves you, it messes that whole thing up, that whole balancing it. But anyway.
Yeah, and I don't think I would have ever given anybody 8 months or 3 months or anything. I would just say, just, you know, ask God to show his love to you, however long it takes. And sometimes it's 2 or 3 months, sometimes it's 5, 6 months. Times are arbitrary. The prayers, I don't really give incantations to people, you know, because whatever your own words work. I love what you're saying about show me who you really are, show me who I really am. And those are great things. Because I think when we're praying those things, we're asking God for those things, it's conditioning our heart and mind to look for those things. I think there's so much of God's fingerprints that we miss in our lives because we're so head down, trying to survive work, family, you know, whatever else is going on in our life, we miss it. And we're praying, God, show me your love. I think it just makes us more perceptive to what's going on around us. And that's him answering that prayer, is by helping us see it and helping us have a little bit, because he's always loving us. There's never a time he's not. So I'm not praying, oh, God, would you love me this month? It's like, no, God, show me how you are loving me. And I've been in circumstances that have been horrible. And I will even say, God, I don't know how you're loving me here, but I know you are. So I'm going to trust that love, even when everything else around me looks like you've abandoned me. And because it's not in his nature to do it. So, but life, and I think this is the difficult challenge for God. How does the transcendent God convince people in a broken world of that they're loved? when all their circumstances are not going to be what we think a loving God would do if he loved us. He would fix this, change that, and do that. And that hangs up a lot of Christians who feel like, man, if God loved me, this wouldn't be in my life. I wouldn't have lost my job. I wouldn't have this condition in my body. I wouldn't. And it makes it difficult for God to just say, no, don't look for what you think you should have. Look for ways I'm making myself known. And that's where we find traction in his love. And it can take 2 months, 8 months. It can take a lifetime. I know people who come, like you were sharing earlier about your dad. I've known people come to finally know the love of God on their deathbed. And man, I'm sure God would love to have them come home 40 years earlier, but he's happy to give them at the last minute. That's what it takes.
Chris and Maggie, did you guys have a question?
Yeah, I kind of had a follow-up question on that. I mean, I find ever since this Heart of a Warrior encounter, I experience God's love a lot, and I feel a presence, but discerning his voice is very difficult. I don't know if there's any counsel or advice or anything you'd have on.
Yeah, I don't think there's any cute techniques about it. I think it's just a matter of asking him to teach you to realize he is speaking to you. I think a lot of times expectations are kind of skewed to people want to hear a voice. They want to hear, something specific. I think it's mostly a thought that's in our head that's not our thought. And that discernment is my thought. I mean, that's how the I've got more to teach you if you walk away than if you stay. That started as a thought in my head. And I'm like going, I hate that thought, which often makes me think it's God, because I like every thought I've ever had. I love my thoughts. I've tried to convince God my thoughts are great, but his thoughts always disturb me because they invite me down a road I wouldn't have chosen. But isn't that what you want out of a God? You want a God who knows a better road than you know. So I think it's just a matter of asking him, not getting focused on words. I mean, it can come out of a lyric in a song you're listening to. It can come out of a book you're reading, like even a secular book or a movie. I've had just something in a movie. You sit there and go, it's not even a movie about God, but you just go, oh my gosh, that's so good. That really touches my heart. Just, yeah, because I was going through some things that that were kind of painful for me, and I'd been involved in something that was fairly significant, but a lot of people didn't know. And I was watching that movie about Tom Hanks went to rescue that U-2 fighter that got shot down over Russia. I forget the name, Bridge of Spies or something. Yeah. And I'm feeling all that weight of it. And as he's flying back on the airplane with Tom Hanks' character, he says, you know what? I never broke. I didn't give the Russians anything. And Tom Hanks said, well, that's good to know. And but he points down to all the soldiers on the airplane. He said, but none of them in here would believe that. They all think I did. And he said, I'm the only one that knows. And Tom Max looked at him and said, and that's the only one that counts. And that statement in the midst of what I was dealing with, and I know I had just me, I knew God knew. So there were two of us. Yeah. And that's all that mattered to me. I don't care if other people know. Mm-hmm. And so there's things like that where just things come into your life where it's like the tumblers on a safe that everything clicks into place. It's got, ooh, that there's something there. And it may take even a few days or weeks to realize the thought in your head is God's. The clicking together isn't always immediate. But at some point, you finally go, gosh, that's it. And so there's no real secret to it. I think it's just simply asking, looking, broadening where you're looking, not being too intent about trying to find a voice somewhere or a, you know, like people say, ask God for an answer and give me an answer. I say, he's answering you. He may not be giving you an answer like words to follow, but he's opening your perspective in a way that's going to let you think differently about this down the road.
Chris, the last time I had a word like that, that you knew it wasn't your voice, was making a really difficult decision about punching out at American Airlines in early retirement. And I'm thinking about this, and I don't want to make the wrong decision. Is what it really comes down to. And I hear as clear as can be, you can't make a wrong decision. And I just knew that's not my voice, you know, but he answered my need, and I wasn't even asking him. That was the amazing thing. Him and you and him, you know, I'm just assuming he's with me. I'm not really necessarily petitioning him, but man, it was so beautiful. And man, when that happened, all of a sudden it was like 100-pound weight taken off my chest. That's a good indication, you know, that was God. You know, it was like, sure. Oh, I just relaxed and I took a deep breath, you know, and So if that's at all helpful.
Thank you.
Wayne, talking about trust, the one beautiful line I love in the book was that he wanted us to love others, but to trust him alone. And I love that because it takes so much pressure off our relationships. I've had good relationships where somebody has come over and met a need in such a way they were Christ to me that day. And it would be easy for me to try to, you know, put that relationship in a level of trust that it's just human. It can't go there, you know? And you've written that long before you've had some serious betrayals in your life, right? We can't help but to trust. We have to put our trust sometimes into other people with certain contracts and the way things go and that sort of thing. But there's just this idea that you can love somebody regardless of what the outcome is. That's my only job.
Yeah. But a contract isn't about trust, right? Contract is the absence of it. Yeah, but I think that there are people in our life, there are people I've come to trust because of my relationship with them. I don't entrust my life to them that now they're like God's answer to me. But Sarah's got 45 years of proving her trust as my wife. I trust Sarah implicitly with anything. And if she betrays me someday, well, I'll take the pain of that. I don't live in mistrust of Sarah. There's other friendships I have that have gone deep and been wonderful over years. And I these are people who don't try to take advantage of me, don't try to use me in any way. So I think trustworthiness is a great attribute that we can grow into. But the entrusting ourselves to another human is only setting us up to be disappointed.
Thanks for letting the girls come in on this. Loves Me in a long time, and I want to pick it up and read it again. And especially, Jeff, you're saying that it's something you feel that would be important to read every year as a reminder.
Well, there it is. What a lovely opportunity to talk through that book again. And Jeff, Dana, and Dreeshan, I want to thank you for inviting me to share that time with your group and sharing that audio with all of us. Hey, if you haven't been over to Lifestream lately, a lot of changes going on over there to make some of that material more accessible to other people, particularly the training aspects of that website. So if you haven't been to Lifestream.org, you might want to check it out and see if there's some things there that will help you. And one more thing. Over at Lifestream, we're going to start a new service for people. This is from actually a woman in Pennsylvania who's been selecting a number of quotes out of my books and articles and podcasts and things that she felt were inspiring and a great way to begin the day, just reflecting on a very brief quote of something I've said or written that's had an impact on people's lives. So we're going to start sending that out on Sunday morning, Tuesday morning, and Thursday morning right to your inbox. Very brief quotes, not a long devotional or anything, just very briefly, be able to give you a focus that might invite your heart to God or open it up for the kind of engagements God might have for you on that day in a way that has Jesus more at the center. So if you're not on our mailing list already or you want to be part of that, we'll provide a link at the bottom of this podcast notes if you want to sign up for those if you're not already on that list. And we hope that provides an encouragement as you go about your God journey.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.